Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit TrinitySchool.org for more info now.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey, Zarin.
You know what's ridiculous?
Yeah, it's ridiculous when you're walking around in like a mall or a casino and you get kind of disoriented in terms of like getting a little bit lost and you lose track of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. But what's more ridiculous is that that's on purpose.
What do you mean?
There was this architect, Victor Gruen, and there's this thing called the Gruen transfer, where he designed things purposefully to be have a confusing layout in order to get you to spend more time in a mall, lose track of time.
Is this like how in IKEA you have to walk in and go through every aisle before you can get out? Is that the Gruen effect?
I don't know.
Or the Gruen transfer?
No, I think it's because that's sort of intentional. You feel like you're in a maze.
Exactly.
And there is a map. I mean, there are maps in malls, but it's sort of like the elevators or the escalators are a little bit akimbo sometimes in malls, and you have to really wander around to get up and down. And
oh, interesting.
And again, no clocks. The casino thing's definitely no clocks, no windows.
Yeah.
So in conclusion,
yes.
Getting lost.
In summary.
Getting lost in a mall. Ridiculous.
I'm going to take your word for it.
I don't know. Sure. Yeah.
Well, that's a good one. That one counts.
Yeah.
Now, I got one for you.
Yes.
How about the story, one that's set in the 1990s? It's a very X-Files-inspired tale of a network of UFO sky watchers in Long Island, New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the ridiculous part.
No.
This group is led by a conservative political hopeful.
Okay.
That's not the ridiculous part.
Okay.
He was a retired court bailiff. Still not the ridiculous part. His colleagues included a self-professed time traveler.
Is that the ridiculous part?
We're getting there.
Okay.
We're warming up. He had a friend from college who was a scientist whose day job was working for a government defense contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Not so ridiculous. But eventually, the leader of this group, the retired bailiff, he comes up with a plan to assassinate his Republican political rivals, the local political leadership. And his plan is to use radioactive material.
Oh,
yeah. But it's even better than that. He's going to sneak into their homes and lace their toothpaste and spike their Italian dinners with radioactive nuclear waste.
Only the Italian dinners?
There's a whole story about that. We'll get into it.
Okay.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous. Elizabeth, you ready for this one?
I am.
What do you know about UFOs?
That it stands for Unidentified Flying Object.
Very good.
And that they come at night and take us away.
Okay, very good. You ever seen one?
No.
No? Okay. Well, the first recorded UFO sighting in America was in 1639.
Hmm. Oh.
Yeah, it happened in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The co-founder of the colony, Governor George Winthorpe, he documented this event in his diary. And in his March 1st diary, he's talked of a group of men who were on the Muddy River. I don't know the Muddy River, but apparently it's a local.
It's pretty muddy.
Is it?
I don't know.
I thought maybe you'd know about it. Anyways, we're on this thing called the Muddy River, and they look up and they see what they described like to be a flaming pig. Yeah, it's not exactly their words. How they put it was, and this is what Winthrop wrote in his diary, and I quote,
"It's a hot hog.
When it stood still, it flamed up and was about 3 yards square. When it ran, it was contracted into the figure of a swine. It ran as swift as an arrow towards Charleston. And so up and down, about 2 or 3 hours."
So when they're running in the sky?
He means like flying. They don't have a word for flying because, you know, I mean, they do.
They have
for birds. But I'm saying, for this object, they're not going to describe it like a bird. It was running across the sky.
I'll allow it.
Okay. I'm glad you will, George. You know, he appreciates it. So this great green light disappears, and this group of men in their little dinghy boat on the Muddy River, they find themselves a mile upriver. And they're like, whoa.
Oh, so they lost track of time.
Lost track of time, and they moved against the current a full mile. So they're like, that's just not right.
Yeah.
Now, that was the earliest UFO sighting. And since then, there have been a series of, I don't want to say ridiculous because I'm not going to judge them, but all sorts of sightings that border on the ludicrous, border on the ridiculous, and some of them are very scientific. So they run a range.
Has anyone else seen the hot pig?
No one else mentioned the hot pig in their diaries from the time that I know of.
Curious.
Now, they may have, and it just hasn't come to me yet.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know if you see anything.
I will keep you abreast of any flying hot pigs.
Grazie.
Flaming pigs. Sorry.
Hot pigs.
Hot pig coming through. So this great green light, this UFO in the sky, this becomes kind of I don't want to say an American phenomenon because it's not exclusively American. Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. Everybody sees them. People on every continent have seen UFOs.
Yeah.
Right? But in the American milieu of UFO sightings, it was something that just would bubble up from time to time and people would talk about it. But around the 1990s, it starts to become a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So in 1990, the number of reported UFO sightings were about 319 for the year, 1990.
Okay.
Now, in 2020, the number of UFO sightings, it spiked a bunch. Can you guess how many number?
How many was it in 1990?
319.
So 2020, I don't know, 500,000. No, like a year?
You're wilder with math than I am.
You know what? I like to ballpark it. You just got to get close enough for government work.
Mm-hmm.
I say 6,000.
You are definitely close enough for government work. It was 7,267.
Wow. I did it.
Look at you. I'm really impressed.
Thank you.
So why do you think that it was? Why do you think the sudden spike in the 90s? Were the aliens trying to show up because they needed to get involved in the culture? What was going on in the 90s?
In the 90s? Mm-hmm. Grunge music, boy bands.
They wanted to go see Nirvana live.
Well, sort of the tail end of hair metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They could catch Def Leppard while the one-armed drummer was still banging.
Gangster rap.
Gangster. They wanted to see what Eazy-E had to say about what's
know.
Going
in
on
90s,
in the hood.
In the 90s, I don't know. What you tell me.
Okay, well, going with my man Occam, the simplest explanation for why that spike occurred was a TV show.
Oh, I know.
On September 10, 1993, a TV show debuted called The X-Files.
Good TV show.
You liked that show, didn't you?
I did. I liked that
show. Did you watch it?
I totally watched it. You're like, did you watch it? I didn't. I'm not a nerd.
I was going to say, I didn't watch it initially, but I came to really like it later on when I was around people like you who would watch it who told me, you got to check this show.
Yeah,
so
totally watched it.
Initials?
Yes. Yeah. My brother, my brother never watched it and he liked to make fun of me for watching it. Mm-hmm. So if I had said anything was like weird or curious, he'd be like, oh, tell me more, Mulder. But he'd like get a little speech impediment. Scully.
I might have done a couple jokes similar to your brother.
I feel like that would be on brand.
Yes,
for you.
That is very true. I just remember what got me was the smoking man. When I saw an episode and that dude was in it, I was into the whole like what the fans I've learned this called the myth arc, like the black goo and all that storyline. That's what I was there for. The monster of the week shows really didn't do a lot for me, but that big arc I liked, and that smoking man dude. He just looked like a truck stop motel ashtray, like probably smells, you know? I'm just like, that dude has been through it.
So sinister.
And meanwhile, he's like doing super spy guy stuff with the aliens. Like, I just thought that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. So now, do you remember the show's catchphrase?
That Mulder had in the office, the UFO poster, I want to believe, right?
Is that it? I thought it was the truth is out there.
So yeah, I think the tagline though for the show, you're right. The truth is out there.
Okay. Well, that phrase, the truth is out there, became the catchphrase, the unifying principle for the hero or anti-hero of our story.
How many people do you think have the truth is out there tattoos?
Oh, I don't know. 7,267?
Exactly. Exactly. I want to see people's best X-Files tattoos.
No, that'd be cool.
Yeah. The other thing that I like, aside from fandom tattoos, when I say like, I use that loosely, I enjoy looking at fan art.
How so?
Because it's so bad.
Have you ever gone on? Some of it's amazing, though.
It's sort of changed, though, but it used to be like, I don't know, 10 years ago, you could go on Etsy and search fan art and see like some of the worst art you'll ever see in your entire life of someone trying to sell a picture of Matthew McConaughey that looks like a kid with one arm tied behind their back made an attempt. It's like $5. It's so good. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just now daydreaming about X-Files fan art, really bad versions. Go ahead.
Okay, that's what we're here for.
That is, daydreaming.
So the anti-hero that I mentioned earlier, his name was John Ford, just like the American filmmaker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And John Ford was also into the big American myths. So only the big American myths he was into were that the U.S. government was lying to us. They weren't letting us know about the aliens.
That's a myth.
Exactly. So in 1989, John Ford gets involved in UFO investigations. There is this UFO that crashes on the East Coast, according to John Ford.
In 84?
89. September 28th, 1989, a bunch of people, they report this, they have this sighting of an orange light streaking across the night sky. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Another flaming pig. Now, Ford is convinced that it was a military helicopter that had shot down a UFO and the UFO was crashing after like a sky battle. That was what he saw. Other people saw an orange light just tracing its path to the Earth. And the official explanation was that the military choppers that were in the area that Ford saw were shooting out aerial flares.
Yeah.
And those aerial flares were used to light up the water so that they could see these fishermen who'd been washed from their boat and that's what they were there to ostensibly
that
save.
That happens.
Exactly. Not John Ford's story.
No, flying pigs.
Flying pigs, yeah. He's looking for a flaming hot pig. So he found something called the Long Island UFO Network. Right? And this is a loose cabal of fellow amateur ufologists like him.
He found it?
Yeah, founded.
Oh, founded. I thought it was like all of a sudden he stumbled upon.
He tripped over. What is this? Oh, look, it's the Long Island UFO Network.
It's like a tiny building somewhere.
Yeah, it's a very small building. No, but so he basically creates this group, and their whole goal is to prove that the U.S. military just shot down a UFO and is in fact involved in interstellar warfare.
Well, Godspeed.
You got to have goals, right?
Just right?
Start up high. So the group, though, they can't find any evidence because the alien ship was apparently shot down over the sea, and they don't have submarines,
right.
And they can't really gather anything. So they're talking to locals. They get a bunch of information, but nothing happens. But 4 years later, Ford and his Long Island UFO network, they jump back into action in the investigation world because this time a UFO crashes, but it doesn't crash into water. It crashes on land.
Where?
So now they have something to investigate. Crashes in a forest.
Oh.
Yes.
Hmm.
So I want you to picture it.
Yes.
I said 4 years. It's actually 3 years, but it could be 4 years if you count all the months.
Okay.
Anyway, it's 1992.
Sure.
The X-Files will debut the very next year.
So excited about
that. It's 7 p.m. on November 24th. A man alone in his car is driving on something called Sunrise Highway. It doesn't matter, but basically it's paralleling the Montauk Highway. And between these two highways is this stretch of woods, right?
Okay.
So just imagine East Coast woods, two highways.
So basically he's driving down the road down some next to some woods.
There you go.
There you go.
He's looking south and the man sees an alien spacecraft in the sky, or so he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
The man later described it, and I quote, tubular in shape, with two large bright blue lights on each end, with a bright white light in its center, whose structure was composed of a dull, metallic gray texture.
You know what that sounds like?
Hmm.
Hot pig.
It sounds exactly too bright white. Yeah, okay.
Hello.
So the alien spaceship, it's, you know, running across the sky, as Winthrop would have said, and it then makes a hard right turn, like I'm talking a full-on 90-degree turn, which earthbound aircraft could do. We don't have a flying craft that can make a 90-degree turn.
That seems to be one of the distinctions that you always hear, is that the the lights will suddenly, and the sky will suddenly make a sharp turn.
Mm-hmm. That we couldn't do at speed. Yeah. It would most likely cause the person, the pilot, to like lose consciousness.
Right.
Well, this pilot, if it was a actual alien spaceship, they have something go wrong after this hard 90-degree turn, because the ship suddenly starts to fall from the sky. Mm-hmm. And it, as gravity tugs it to the Earth, the UFO traces this bright arc, and that's what the guy driving watches, and then all of a sudden it crashes into the woods right near that driver.
Oh, wow.
So the driver, he notices a brilliant white beam light up the sky, and he said that day turned to night. That's how bright it was.
Night turned to day.
What did I say?
Day turned to night.
Day turned to... Yes, night turned to day. The opposite.
It was so bright.
It was so bright. It exactly...
It went all the way around.
Around the Earth. And it blocked out the sky. No. Okay, yes. So, night turned to day.
Okay.
Momentarily.
Yeah.
And then the woods caught fire.
Oh.
Yeah, so the man's like, oh, geez. He turns his car around. He starts driving back towards the UFO crash. And
everything's on fire. I'm going to go to the source of the crash.
Exactly.
The fire.
He's a curious type.
All right.
I respect his game. And he gets there. And by the time he gets there, there are already military helicopters that have landed on the highway.
Already?
I don't. That's what all the news stories say. They had already landed. Men dressed in black, wearing military-style clothing, but with no insignias or rank, they jump out of these choppers, and they start basically trying to control the area. They won't let anybody drive into the woods where the crash is. They block those lanes, and they start directing traffic.
Yeah.
Then local police and park police come, and they also start to help. The man, he's like, I don't know if I can get around them. He's a local. He knows the path, so he keeps driving, and eventually he finds a place to pull over near the woods. And then he sees the tremendous fire burning in the thicket of woods. And he's like, yeah, I'm with Elizabeth. Nothing for me to do. And he drives away.
See?
Yeah.
Good boy.
Now, for the next 4 days, the park, which was typically open to the public for whatever they wanted to do, was closed. And the official reason that the government gives is that the park is closed for duck hunting. Now, I looked it up. In 1992, duck hunting in New York, following federal guidelines, because this was in New York, was not allowed after sundown. Of course, the park would normally be closed after sundown, so they only have to get rid of the daytime hours.
Right.
So this park, though, wasn't typically enforced by men in black and military choppers. So there are some issues that are, you know.
I didn't know that that military had anything to do with hunting seasons.
I didn't either. No. This is all new to me. I'm not a hunter.
As an aside, as you know, I like to do, I think that we should get black military clothing and then...
And a chopper?
No, we don't need a chopper. But I think that if we put on... I want to see what would happen if we dressed up like military people and then went and tried to get people to do something in a public... Nothing bad. Like, just go into... like a supermarket and tell everyone they have to leave.
I think I'd need to get a haircut. I don't think
you
blue dreadlocks really
sure
work with the men in black look. I don't think they're really like, wow, they're really drafting all sorts these days.
You with blue dreads and me just bedraggled.
Just
you're like, this disheveled woman is telling me to leave. Well, okay, we'll hire people. I just think it'd be interesting. How much are people willing to do?
When a man
obey.
In black tells them what to do?
Yeah, if you're in like sort of military.
I think a lot, actually. Yeah, I think
outfits.
We could get a lot going on.
I'm going to have to think on this.
You get on Amazon, get us some black clothing.
Yeah,
so the real reason of why all this is going on, the men in black and the choppers, none of this is missed by our man, John Ford. He knows the answer.
Yes.
Aliens!
Yes.
Just like that dude, what's it, Giorgio A. Tsoukalos? I'd look this up. The dude who does...
I'm like, oh yeah, that guy.
He's from Ancient Aliens. I just know him as Ancient Alien guys with
the
crazy
with
hair.
Oh, with the hair.
Yeah,
right.
His name is Giorgio Tsoukalos.
Oh, that's his name.
Yeah, so
Mr. Tsoukalos.
Yeah, Mr. Tsoukalos would have been all about John Ford's like, conclusion because... It's simple. Aliens.
Aliens.
It was aliens. So now John Ford and his Long Island UFO network, they finally have a solid thing to investigate. They've got this fire. They got all the evidence. So they just have to wait for, like, you know, the police to allow them in. This takes many days, but eventually they are able to go in and start investigating. But before they do, John Ford starts his official report of the events that transpired that evening. And I quote.
Yes.
We knew that something crashed into the park that night, and we have, bit by bit, been able to finally put the picture together. Eyewitness accounts have confirmed that a fire was reported immediately after. Thanks, John. There was a fire. So, local firefighters that came out to stop the fire were from Brookhaven National Laboratory's fire department. Okay. If you know Brookhaven, it's a nuclear lab, so that meant to John Ford, cover up!
Right, but if we're saying that it's some sort of aircraft that crashes, mm-hmm. perhaps the best people to address that kind of situation are not the local volunteer firemen, but...
Totally. Well, they happened, Brookhaven happened to be really close.
So right, so that's what I'm saying.
It was both, like, logical that they would be the ones to respond, but then also your point is well made, that you would want these professionals who deal with more emergency situations yeah. in the local...
caustic you know. Materials or that kind of...
Yeah, exactly.
Or little alien men scrambling around, running up trees.
Exactly. You gotta wash them down.
Catch them. It's herding cats, I swear to God.
Can you catch everyone? John Ford is convinced the Brookhaven, though, involvement, that's hinky. He's like, no, son. There's no reason they need to come over here and do that. So he makes a note in his official report.
Which is like in a spiral-bound notebook.
Exactly. Now, after 5, maybe 6 days, the park is finally reopened, right? So Ford and his crew, his UFO crew, go rushing in, and they have to get all that they can. So here, and I return to his official report.
Uh-huh.
We found an area that was burned out and some trees were bent over. A section looked like it had been plowed over by machinery. We were getting a higher than normal radiation reading in the area, higher than regular background radiation. And the fence line in that area had no magnetic reading. Something had stripped away the magnetic charge of the fence.
Oh.
Yeah, right? Wild stuff.
I don't know what any of that means, but wow.
Exactly. So he had, like, you know, a Geiger counter out there, the crew mm-hmm. did, and they were, you know, checking the Rankin readings on the radiation, and they okay. said, oh, this is higher than average. I don't know
yeah,
what
I mean,
they
that's
were off,
what
awesome
they said, but...
about this. You know, like, maybe they were really good, and they were like, oh, we've got, you know, data for the last few weeks, months. I don't know, or if they just, like, went out there, like, a couple days before, and it's like, what was the last reading we had in our notebook? John, check the spiral notebook.
They're looking in the manual from their Radio Shack Geiger counter.
Yeah, like I have no idea. They don't mention this in the official report. But Ford then does have something very strange occur that helps him in his investigation. A firefighter steps forward and says, I've got a tape for you.
This is totally like out of the X-Files.
He'd recorded footage of the crash site.
What?
Yes, secretly. And so now Ford has this tape from the UFO crash site. So what's on it? What do you think's on it?
Little dudes scrambling around, running up trees.
You nailed it. So, and I quote, Ford says, I can't say where I got it from. These people who supplied the tape are afraid that the government will go after them. One of the major problems in researching UFOs is that people are afraid of sounding like lunatics when describing strange, unexplained events. You get involved with things that the government doesn't want people to know, and they can make life pretty tough for you.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not wrong about that. And he goes on, we are still actively investigating this event. We believe that an extraterrestrial craft with aliens crashed that night in the park, and we are out to prove it. This is possibly one of the greatest events in the history of man, is what John Ford told the local press.
So what the what is on the tape?
I know, right?
Oh, you're holding out on me.
I am. So we'll be back after this short break, and I'll tell you all about the Long Island UFO Network and the tape that they discovered and what is on it with the little men running up and down the trees.
I can't wait.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good to your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
So where were we, Elizabeth?
You were going to tell me what was on this videotape.
Ah, yes. Well, the UFO crew, this gang of UFO geeks, what will eventually turn into assassins with radioactive material, first they have to have the hard proof that they can build the foundation of belief on, and this tape is their hard proof.
That is such a wild jump, P.S., of like, UFO guys and then radioactive assassins.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about John Ford, and then I'll get you right to the tape.
Okay.
My man, John Ford, he was a court bailiff, as I told you, right? Mm-hmm. He went to college. He's an educated man. He went to St. John's University in Queens, New York. He graduated. He then went on to earn a master's degree. And then that's when he took a job at the Brooklyn Criminal Court as a bailiff. So he's a bailiff with a master's degree.
What did he get his master's in?
Public administration.
Okay. Interesting.
So he's also a very kind-hearted guy. Everyone who knew John Ford described him, they'd say that John Ford, he would adopt dogs from the pound. He delivered emergency supplies when people were affected by a local hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the type of person who would cry when he struck a cat with his car.
Well, I would hope so.
Well, no, I'm not trying to be like a jerk about it, but not every human being is like you or they're going to cry when they hit a cat. And this guy is a court bailiff. He's a man who carries a gun for his living.
Yeah,
I just wanted to let
yeah.
you know he's a soft version of a man who carries a gun for a living
yeah,
in the sense
yeah, that
he cares sense. About the loss of life. It is
right.
not something he expects and rationalizes away. It's just like a cruel world.
He's not running down kitty cats on the highway.
No,
he's not
definitely not doing that. So basically my point is dude has a big heart and he's college educated.
Got
right?
it. Got
okay?
it.
But he also never got married.
Mm-hmm.
He was engaged twice, but
mm-hmm.
he never got married. Neither uh-huh. engagement lasted. Yeah. So he remained his mother's constant companion.
Yeah.
He lived with his mom until she passed away in the 90s.
Okay.
Now, Catherine Ford, his mother, she was the one who got him into politics. She was big into local politics. She ran for local offices over and over again. In fact, she pushed her son to do it. She got him to found the local conservative party club. That's what he called it, conservative party club.
Uh-huh.
And he threw his club support behind his mother's candidacies. And
yeah.
she never won in a single election.
Poor thing.
Yeah. Over time, John Ford and his mother, they both kind of get angry and bitter at the locals. They don't think the Republicans really appreciate what they want to bring to local
mm-hmm.
politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this big-hearted John Ford, he starts, you know, turning his energies inward, and he starts a weapons collection. He gets bulletproof vests and ammo, knives of all kinds, right? He starts reading Soldier of Fortune magazine. He's just like, you
yeah.
know, feeding these
yeah.
fantasies of getting violent revenge. So this bailiff, mind you, as I mentioned before, he's supposed to carry a gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's not that good with a gun. He's not known for his,
oh.
he's like able to pass his gun exam so he can like still legally but, you know, carry the gun.
Yeah.
But nobody would be like, hey, crack shot, why don't you come over here and see
look
what you can
quick
do.
Draw.
Yeah, exactly. So he's mostly, other than his weapons collection, he's known for collecting trains. He had apparently a great model train collection.
Uh-huh.
So basically, the dude's like a big kid. He's reading
yeah,
Soldier of Fortune magazine.
Like.
He's collecting knives, and he's got a train collection.
Well, it's
lives at home with his
like
mom.
That he and his mom wanted to be involved in local politics, which is sort of like the lifeblood of American democracy,
mm-hmm,
right? Like
mm-hmm.
ground floor. And if they feel they can't get in, like this backlash against the system they want to be in so badly, this
mm-hmm.
the government. Like, I mean, I can see it doesn't make it right, but it's like you can see the psychology behind it.
But yeah.
You know, they feel kind of denied and
mm-hmm. and that will play out over and over again.
But it also tells me there are underlying issues with these two.
There may
I'm
or may not be.
So gentle
and generous. Right? I like that about
yeah.
you. So this big kid with his knife collection and his model trains and his inability to hit a target with a gun.
Captain Red Flag. Yeah,
he's focusing at this point. His mother passes away, right? Mm-hmm. And he's left on his own. He lives in the house by himself. He starts focusing on his Long Island UFO network, which he is the president of. So it gives him some level of power. In 1993, he injures his back at work. So he has to quit. He has to retire as a bailiff. And he just basically starts to focus on being a ufologist, essentially, right?
Okay.
But also the leader of men, like the leader of this group of ufologists.
Yeah, he wants to be, yeah.
So when the crash occurs, John Ford becomes convinced that in that crash that I told you about in the woods with the spaceship, that 17 aliens died in this crash. Where the number 17 comes from, I couldn't quite tell you, but he just...
Because 1 + 7 = 8.
Oh.
And if you ate the food that they were putting in your brain from the government, you would know.
That 1 > 8 = 9, and 9 + 8 = 17.
And 9 lives is the number of lives that a cat has. And he will not cry. He will not laugh when he runs over a cat.
Boom.
There's the bow on the top. Thank you.
All tied up in red string.
I'm going to put that in my official report.
So he, speaking of official reports, he starts compiling, as I told you, his official report of the accident. And he gets that tape, right? Now, he's convinced that this tape will give evidence that the Brookhaven National Laboratory is hiding these 17 aliens that were part of the crash.
Do you think he has like a big tan filing cabinet in his home? And that all the official reports for all the various incidences are in there, as well as like phone bills that he just doesn't want to throw away because he doesn't want the garbage men to have his personal information.
Yes, I do think there are certain hoarding techniques.
Because that's what's in my head. Right,
and organization of bureaus and file cabinets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Ford, with his videotape that he got from the firefighter who secretly recorded it on the scene, he's takes this because now that he's an unemployed bailiff and his mother's gone, he takes the video on the road and he starts going to UFO conventions and conferences and he will show anyone and everyone who will watch it. And he's like, I'm from the Long Island UFO Network and we've got this fresh tape that is changing the landscape of ufology right now today. People are like, really? Wow. There's one problem though. The tape sucked. The quality was terrible. You could barely make out what was happening because it was at night with a video camera and apparently the video allegedly showed men in black covering up the suspected UFO crash site, and they were putting like silvery Mylon covers over what looked like a human-like figure.
Okay.
That's what he had. No, like
those
this is
emergency...
clearly an alien. It was just like, oh, I can see a leg and I think an arm, and oh, there goes the sheet.
Yeah,
that
like
was the
one
video.
Of those like shock blankets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah. So there, that was his big reveal. Uniformed men placed silvery Mylar coverings on what looked like maybe a small child in the woods. Now,
I wish I were there for when they recorded that, because I'm sure it was amazing.
I wish I was there at some of these conventions or conferences, and they'd be in the front row. What? That's it?
Well, no, you know it's going to be totally divided. You're going to have people like Ford, mm-hmm. who are totally believing this and know it in their bones to be true, but mm-hmm. then how terrifying is that? Is that if you know something and everyone is like, you're crazy, you know, like mm-hmm. that's got to be a crap feeling.
Yeah.
But then you're also going to have the people who are sitting there like arms crossed. The video ends. They like thumbs down it. Lame. I want to see that debate.
I just like, you know, a room full of nerds turning on each other. And as one, I, you know, I'm talking
about
people.
Yeah, as a nerd, that's what I'm saying. I love this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So the tape is a hit on the conference circuit. It's also questionable. So some people, you pretty much called it. Some people are like, this is the proof we need. And other people are like, what are you talking about?
Lame.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what I've always wanted to do after a presentation, just go boring.
We need to get you to more presentations. This is a dream that can occur. We can make this one happen.
I just haven't stirred up the courage to do it someday.
Well, hopefully. Now, one thing I've kind of left out is one of the crashes, this alien crash, when it hit the forest that in 1995, a later crash, the UFO crashed into the woods, another UFO crash in the woods.
Same woods?
Second one. So we had one in 89, 92,
oh,
now
snap.
We're in 95, right?
Okay.
So in 95, the UFO crashes into Pine Barrens. Right? And I couldn't read that without hearing like Polly Walnuts in my head talking about like the Russian, what is it, the interior decorator.
The interior decorator.
Do you remember that episode?
So well. I love that episode. I really do.
Yeah,
it's
right?
good.
It's a solid one.
Sopranos.
Okay. So think of
Did you
like,
mention this is Sopranos?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We should mention it's The Sopranos, if you don't know.
Hit television series The Sopranos aired on HBO.
the Pine Barrens episode,
I say
classic.
Too much stuff where I think that everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we so should
I'm
probably clear up that reference. That's good. I like that. Thank
trying
you.
Trying to throw an anchor here, pal.
Well, much like Tony Soprano had his, like, crew of ne'er-do-well criminals and loyal partisans, but basically...
Soldiers.
Thank you. That's the term. Soldiers. My man, John Ford, had his. And I want to introduce you to the crew.
Oh,
you ready?
Wow.
We've got the loyal right-hand man. Government name, Steve Iavarone. He was the vice president of the Long Island UFO Network. He had business cards.
VP. Oh, he did?
Yeah. He was an electric contractor. He was a big, burly dude. He was also sort of the guy who believed he was always under surveillance from Men in Black.
Sure. There the thing is, what if he was?
That's the point, right?
Yeah.
See?
Okay.
Now, there is also the KG veteran investigator.
Ooh, I like him.
Government name, Preston Nichols. Yeah. Now, Nichols was a heavyset 50-year-old dude. He lived with his father, and in his bedroom, he kept a rock collection. In the driveway, so he had sad. Parked an old school bus.
It
was
no.
a project he was working on.
Not
he,
allowed.
He planned to convert the school bus into a, quote, mobile UFO investigative unit.
Oh, sure.
Now, if you're wondering, hey, Zarin, what does one keep in their mobile UFO investigative unit? Don't worry. I got you covered.
I'm so scared.
Right? Nichols kept in his school bus / mobile UFO investigative unit, quote, a mine detector, a Geiger counter, a magnetic detector, a gas detector, and an ionization detector.
So
lots
much
of detectors.
Detecting yes. going on.
The first time I read it, I thought it said mime detector. I was like, why would he need to know where mimes are?
Because they're sneaky.
Yeah, because they're silent. You don't need
there's
a detector.
Like, because he could have the school bus and he starts it up and then something doesn't feel right and there's a mime clinging to the undercarriage of the school bus.
It's like magnetic.
Yeah, pause. And you're not going to hear them. Hello. Yeah.
Silent killers.
Mime's the silent killer.
This KG veteran investigator, Nichols, he believed that his UFO buddy, John Ford, was getting too close to the truth.
Yeah.
And he tried to warn him, basically going like, hey, man, I don't know. They're getting real close. We got to be smart, son. And, like, you know, Ford was a little more confident because, you know, he was in the courts. He was a bailiff. He knows oh, yeah. how power works. He's like, look.
He's an insider.
I'm not afraid yet. And they're like, oh, okay, right? And he's like, yeah. Because Nichols is like, man, you got to be smart about this because one day it's going to cost you your life. Now, he was kind of close. Kind of close.
Oh.
Because it did cost him a lot.
So we have Ford is the president. Mm-hmm. Nichols is the VP.
Iavarone is the VP.
Iavarone. And Nichols is what? Sergeant in arms?
He's the KG investigator. He's our veteran investigator. He's
okay.
the one with the school bus.
Got
right?
it. I'm just okay. trying to
yeah, keep
paint
them all
this
there.
Picture in my head.
Now, you also have to keep in mind, Nichols is also the one who was a time traveler. Remember I told you there's a time traveler? That's Nichols. He once
he
told the Washington.
He has a school bus and he's a time traveler.
And he's a time traveler, yeah. And he lives with his dad and he has a rock collection. He's.
If I wrote a short story about mm-hmm. this, people would be like, stop.
This is too
no,
on the nose.
Leave
this
it alone.
Is just mean. Yeah.
You got problems.
Yeah, no, the reality is always better. I'm telling you, it's wild.
It is.
So this dude, Nichols, he told the Washington Post, and I quote,
yes.
I didn't believe in time travel until I saw evidence that I had time traveled. I just love that quote so much. Like, how do you see evidence that you time traveled? Good question.
Yeah.
What it turns out yeah. was he had been watching the news and he saw himself on TV. The local news showed this firefighter fighting one of the fires in the woods. With uh-huh. you know, so he sees this firefighter. He's like, that's me. That's younger me come from the future, or come from the past, rather. And I've been sent to the future to gather up evidence of the aliens because we apparently know that they're trying to hide it. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. I think you send yourself from the future yeah. to the past, not
well,
from the past to the future.
And let's say it was him fighting a fire. Yeah, you know what? If we see ourselves on TV, that was past us.
Yes.
Doing whatever, because it's not live.
But I like his future him on the, apparently the same timeline, because his past self was the one who was sent into the forward in time. He doesn't have any memory of this. He
that
just sees himself, and he's like, that's
his past,
me.
His, so as a kid,
yeah, well, as a younger
or as
man,
a young man, he's zapped forward in time.
Yes, to work as a firefighter in a local
by
Brookhaven
whom?
National Laboratory's fire department.
By whom?
The righteous
them?
People of the future.
Quote, unquote,
who are
them?
Also in the past. I don't know. I don't know.
He needs to get out of that school bus. He's been inhaling
fumes. Working out with some solvents.
He's got too many electronics and too many chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to touch grass.
Oh, definitely. Some hard grass. Yeah. Maybe like roll in the grass. Not just touch it. Like put it all over your body. Now, the best friend from college was also part of the crew. He was part of this Long Island UFO crew. So we have the best friend from college turned defense contractor employee, last member of our crew.
Okay.
Government name? Edward Szabo.
Edward Szabo.
I love that name.
That's
Edward
Szabo.
He's a 49-year-old electrical inspector, and he works at Northrop Grumman.
Okay.
Or Grumman. Northrop
sure.
Grumman.
Whichever. All of it.
So now he was the plug for the radioactive waste that will come into the assassination plot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right? So leading up to the nuclear assassination plot, John Ford starts experiencing a series of devastating personal blows. I've already told you about one. He injured his back and he loses his job. He loses his mother 2 years later. So in 93, he injures his back. In 95, his mother passes away.
Yeah.
Now he's alone in the world, untethered. So yeah. What does he start doing? He starts hanging out with local small-time criminals.
Well, why not?
You know, he just needs to meet interesting people with interesting stories to tell.
Yeah, that's the place.
All right, so the cagey veteran investigator, Nichols, he was the one who, as I told you, believed his younger self was a mysterious firefighter from the past.
School bus Joe.
Now, he was the one who would basically act as kind of the voice of reason for John Ford.
Okay, so if he's your voice of reason.
You can start to see where the problems are, right?
Yeah.
So Ford is meanwhile focused on this government cover-up of the UFOs that keep crashing near him. They crash in the ocean, they crash in the woods. He's like, they're shooting him down. There's clearly a fight going on. They're hiding their dead bodies at the Brookhaven. And he decides that it's the local Republican political leaders in Suffolk County who are the key to all of this.
Oh, sure. It's obvious.
They're the ones who are managing the cover-up.
The ones who wouldn't vote for him.
Yeah, the local, supervisor of Suffolk County.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, right? So he's like, you know what I need to do? I need to start keeping one of my 35 firearms on me at all times, because I don't know when things are going to pop off.
Yeah, good idea.
Right? So you see the ideas are starting to snowball.
Good idea factory over there.
And then he runs into the real trouble that I mentioned earlier, where he decided to start hanging out with small-time criminals. So he finds these local hoods, and he's like, why don't you come live with me in my house that my mother and I used to share?
Oh. Yes. Don't mind my mother's body in the rocking chair upstairs.
Yeah. I wear her dress on weekends, but it's cool. So this 42-year-old hustler named Joseph Masuccelli, he was the career criminal of the crew. So he's the one who's brought in, and he's a very bad criminal. He is not good at it.
He's a bad, bad man.
Yeah, Joseph Masuccelli was described as a tough-talking former junkyard employee.
Okay.
Imagine someone's like, what's he like? Well, he's a tough-talking former junkyard employee. Now, he was also known as, if you asked around, people would be like, oh, Joe Masuccelli? Yeah, he's a wiry, tattooed hot rodder. That was another description locals gave of him. The police referred to him as a convicted burglar.
Yeah.
That's what they called him. Now, Ford takes a liking to him. He's like, Joe, you need to move in with me and my mom's, whatever vibe that's still in the house.
Vibe.
It works out that luckily Joe Masuccelli, he believes in UFOs. So he doesn't have to convince him of the truth.
Good.
And also he's like, the tough talking former junkyard employee is really like apparently good for John Ford's sense of familial bonds. They become almost brotherly, I'm guessing. Maybe not, maybe more intimate than that. I don't really know, and I'm not going to speculate.
Brothers,
but they start sharing home and making a home together.
They're brothers bound by hot pig.
Exactly. Flaming pig brought them together, and it keeps them together.
That's right.
So this Joe Masuccelli, he becomes the kind of care function for John Ford, right? Mm-hmm. He no longer cares for his mother. So now he transfers that to Joe. He gives Joe a cell phone so he can always call him in case any of the bad people try to grab him off the road or whatever.
Yeah.
He also gives Joe money and a credit card in his own name to use. Uh-huh. Then he gives Joe one of his guns. You can start to see where this is going, right?
I see that Joe is probably thinking, jackpot.
Yeah. So the powder keg is set. Fuse is all laid out. All we have to do is just touch down the radioactive spark and we get this thing going. Now, the last piece to fall into place is a man named Kevin Koch. Kevin Koch. And he enters the story as a friend of Joe Masuccelli. We'll be back after this short break and I'll tell you how Kevin Koch turns this whole thing nuclear.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good at your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Okay, Elizabeth. We got John Ford playing house with Joe Masicelli, who he's given a credit card and a gun to. And now Joe Masicelli's brought around one of his friends, a small-time criminal, and he's trying to... sell the gun that he was just given by John Ford because he needs to make a little, pocket money.
Yeah, he's so running around money.
He's like, hey, Kevin Koch, why don't you come by the house and I'll sell you that gun? So Koch is like, hey, man, you guessed it. And he like rolls over to the house. And so Masicelli and Ford, they spend the night hanging out, right? And they're just like, just the three of them and John Ford's dogs, right? And they're just like chilling there. And now, you have to understand, just picture like a older woman's house, right? You're going to have like lots of like doilies
Florals.
And framed photos and everything. So that's what I want you to picture in the backdrop while these men describe to each other how they would kill the local politicians with radioactive waste.
Okay.
So they're just sitting in this nice old woman's house going...
floral chintz sofa.
Yeah. Exactly. So they just keep talking about how these local politicians got to go down, right? And Masicelli... He's like, yeah, John, that's true, man. We should do something about that. Yeah, what are we going to do with all these knives and guns and your model train collection? We could mess them up or whatever, right? And Cox getting involved, too. And he's like, yeah, man, totally, man. You got knives. We could do them wrong. He's like, no, I've got the way. And so then he tells Cox, he's like, yeah, man, I got this plug for radioactive waste. And Cox is like, what? He immediately goes to the police and he's like, I got a story for
you.
Good
for him.
So now we have the snitch of the UFO crew. So Koch goes and he tells the police, he's like, man, there's this guy, John Ford, in your town, and he's got this plot to assassinate all the local Republican leaders, and he's planning on using, radioactive isotopes, he was telling me, and I think it was specifically something called radium. And they're like, are you for real right now? Like, sir, how high are you? And he's like, no, I got evidence, man. They're like, okay, how about this? Would you wear a wire to this place where people are talking about killing people with radioactive waste? And he's like, you bet, man, because you see, I got this bust and maybe you guys could take off the books.
Nice.
And so they work out a deal and he's like, okay. So he gets a wire and he goes back to John Ford's house.
Yeah, like, and then he's going to walk in and that dingus is going to be like, I have to check you for wires because the feds.
Yeah, exactly, because he's super paranoid, right?
Yeah.
So Joe Masicelli and Ford are once again hanging out with his three fox terriers, which I forgot to mention earlier. John Ford has three fox terriers. So picture three fox terriers hanging out with these three men while they're like, messing up grandma's doilies. And the men get to talking. The talk turns first from women and sex because, small-time criminals, what are you going to talk about when you're just sitting around shooting the ship? They're just sitting around And they eventually go from women and sex to talking about UFOs because, you know, John Ford's like, you know, we talk about the real stuff. And they're
well,
like,
it's
yeah.
like they used to say sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sex, drugs, and spaceships. So, and eventually they get from sex, drugs, spaceships to local politics.
Hey.
They tied it all together.
Hey.
Right? And Ford's like, yeah, man. Speaking of local politicians, right? So they start getting back on, like, him dreaming aloud about how he's going to use radioactive waste to kill his rivals. And Kachi's like, yeah, man, word? Tell me more. Go on, son. Like, let's get into some details, right?
I'm just envisioning someone who looks totally different than what you're sounding like.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it's hilarious.
I've seen pictures of them. You're probably pretty correct.
Yeah, but them talking like you're talking, so good.
So Ford lays out his perfect plan to erase all the local Republican leadership. And they're like, so, man, Ford, how are you going to do it? And he's like, okay, see, I thought about it. I'm going to sneak into their homes, and then I'm going to poison them with my radioactive waste. They're like, man, how are you going to just poison them with radioactive waste? He's like, no, see, I told you, I thought about it. I'm going to sneak it in to things that they will ingest. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, can you put it in their water? No, no, I'm going to put it in the toothpaste. And they're like, how are you going to put it in the toothpaste?
There's the whole phrase, putting the toothpaste back in the tube.
Exactly. It's impossible. He's like, well, yeah, you may have a point there. How about I'll hide it in the Parmesan cheese?
Like, he's what? Like, how about this? I'm going to put it in my mouth, and I'm going to sneak in, and I'm going to put their toes in my mouth while they sleep and just soak it in through their toes while I suckle their toes.
Exactly. It'll saturate underneath the nail bed.
I found the official files, Aaron. I just read it.
Well, he's all convinced that these guys enjoy, as he constantly calls them, Italian dinners. And he's like, we just need to get into their Italian dinners, and then they'll eat it. And
so that's
he's
profiling.
Like, he's thinking like, you know, I got this yellow cake. I'm like, bro, it's not uranium. It's not. I got to hide it in the Parmesan because that's yellow, right?
Just
that's powdery.
Crumble it on down. Sprinkle me.
Yeah, sprinkle it, baby. Sprinkle it. So Ford starts bragging some more, and he's like, yeah, man, see, quote, I got that very dangerous stuff in the back of the truck. Like, we could go over
Wait,
right
it's
now.
Just in his truck?
Yeah, he's just keeping radium in the back of his truck.
As I called him, a dingus.
Yeah, and so Koch is like, so how dangerous is that? And Ford's like, oh, man, that's cool, man. Like, I got it, like, in lead. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, and I quote, it's in a 3-inch lead container, and it's leaking about 5 Rankins per hour. Because he's go out there, and he's taking his, like, Geiger counter and checking it.
They have the equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Come over there with the mime counter and mime detector.
Like, so, no mimes present. It's safe.
It's safe. We should be fine.
It's just, like, in an old Cheetos bag, like, the metal, and it's twisted up at the top.
At the top with a rubber band.
Yeah, yeah. Real tight, though. Real
and
tight rubber band.
Tinfoil wrapped around the whole thing.
Yes.
So, at this point, according to the police recording of the event, someone,
that's right, he's lying.
Someone gets up to make himself a drink. So the police hear like clink, like ice cubes clinking around in a glass. And then Ford gets loud again, and he starts focusing on his idea for this murderous uranium plot, right? And he's actually not uranium, radium, but anyway, like his radioactive murder plot. And he's like, okay, you see, guys, this isotope will start glowing in 24 hours. I don't know if he's holding it up and then he says this, but he's telling this to these two small-time criminals who I imagine are very impressed. They're just like,
sure.
Oh, yes, I didn't actually do well in school, so this is really interesting. So the men are all laughing about the idea of these radioactive day-glow local Republican politicians. And then he's like, so, like, they're like, if you couldn't get it into their food, like, say, their delicious Italian dinners or into the toothpaste, where might you else place this radium? And he's like, well, that's a good point. If that didn't work, and I quote, I could put it in a bag, take the little bag and put it underneath his car seat. So he was going to
just let it
do exactly what
up.
You said. Put it in some like Cheetos bag and shove it under the car seat and then just radium
poison. So it'll
be
like when if someone's in your car and they drop food and like French fries under the seat and you kind of smell it for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like,
what is that?
What is that?
Radium?
Is that iridium? No, wait. Is it... No, I think it's beryllium.
And
no,
then they just, like,
it's radium.
And they go to like brush their hand through their hair and it just all comes out in their hand.
All Silkwood style. Like, meanwhile, Ford at this point, he's just crushing it. He's on a roll. Like the police are losing it because they're like listening to the wire and you can tell Ford is building up and building up. And he's like, he's bragging to these small time criminals about how he's going to kill these local politicians with his radioactive waste. And he's like, man, he starts talking about one of them and the guy's name is Gazzola, right? So he's like, does Gazzola eat Italian food? Take the yellow powder and mix it in with chopped garlic. The radium in with the chopped garlic, man. And they're like, oh, that's genius, man. John, oh, man, you got to do that. He's like, yeah, right? Now, maybe it was the liquor talking. I don't know. But Ford, he gets really carried away and he now starts talking about how he'll kill the U.S. president, the president of the United States, with radioactive material. Remember,
nah, there's all these done it,
cops
son.
Listening. So he's
nah,
like,
done it.
He tells the snitch and the career criminal, and I quote, I'll kill that President Clinton up the I'll do it.
Oh.
Yes. Oh. He's like good and drunk, apparently. So yeah. This is pretty much all the cops need to hear. Once
this
you say
man,
that you're going to put radioactive waste into the rectum of the president,
this
done
is a
deal.
Man who is lives basically in fear of the government coming after him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, come after me, government.
Yes, exactly. With a giant neon sign. Here,
what
this
a,
house, dome here.
What a bozo.
So while Ford continues to muse on all the various ways that he could sneak radium into the rival's tubes of toothpaste or their Ford 150s, the police move into position.
Yeah,
now,
rightfully so.
With a signal, the cops descend like a bear trap snapping shut. The door breaks open, cops rush in, all three men are arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can believe it, this was just the beginning of the madness.
It's just the... Oh.
Yes. Oh, so, because there was the question that was the most primary importance to the cops was the obvious question. Where the hell did this guy get this radioactive waste?
Yeah, it's sitting in his truck.
Yeah, he's just like driving around town with, just like, you know, it's in the back of my truck. So the next day, the police officers and a radiation team, they go out and they check the house of Edward Szabo.
Oh, right. He works at the, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's how, boom, they found the plug. It was just
wow.
That easy. Turns out, yeah, Szabo's the connect. So Ford's college best friend, the defense contractor employee turned part-time assassin, he is basically was doing it. Remember that Johnny Cash song?
Which one
piece at a time?
Yes.
He
oh,
was basically
doing
one piece at a time with radioactive waste. So in the song, if you don't know it, Johnny Cash talks about this guy who works at a Cadillac plant, and he takes one piece every day from home from work, and he builds himself a Cadillac at home.
But that's built over the years.
Yeah, and it takes him years. So he has like one, like the front fender will be from a 67, the steering wheel's from a 72. So he's like, it's a great song, you should listen to it. Edward Szabo is doing that with radioactive material. He's just collecting it, and he's putting in his, like, lunchbox and going home with little bits and building up this huge surplus.
So Szabo's hair is totally falling out.
Yeah.
His skin is gray, but, like...
He's just glowing. Yeah, he's a flaming pig. So...
Hot pig.
So the police, mind you, they just go, you know what? I bet he may have some other stuff here other than like, you know, mime detectors,
you know,
and so forth.
Dollars to donuts.
They check and they find all the makings for a dirty bomb. There are blasting caps, fuses, detonators, and of course, all the aforementioned radioactive waste.
Oh.
So he gets arrested for illegal possession of weapons and explosives and the radioactive waste that he stole from work. Now, you ready for the glowing mistake in Ford's plan?
Yes.
His plan to kill these people with radium would have taken forever. He would have likely died before his targets died from the radiation poisoning.
Okay.
According to nuclear experts, if Ford had gone through with his plan and tried to kill them, even if he had to put it in their toothpaste or in their Italian dinners, it would have taken about 20 years for them to die.
Okay.
That's like if you wanted to kill someone, you planted a seed, you watered a tree, you grew the tree really tall, you
down.
Wait for a time to get them right underneath and you cut it down. I mean, it's the dumbest
that
assassination
is,
plot I've ever
well,
heard.
Well, it didn't sound like a brain trust over at that place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So basically, if you're going to be using radioactive waste, radium is not the one. You want to get something with a higher count.
Duly noted.
Yeah, so just put that in mind. Now, of course, the police were a little bit more worried. They were not with the nuclear experts. They're like, this could have given everybody radiation sickness in 10 days. And they're like freaking out about it. So
yeah.
They took a slightly different tack.
I like a freak out, personally.
I know you do. So Ford, meanwhile, he gets arrested and he takes the time to write a 102-page manifesto. Because, you know, of course he does. That's what
right.
one does. When,
step
you know.
Two.
So in his
one, get arrested.
Yeah,
two, manifesto.
Write the manifesto. Because, you know, he's got his Long Island UFO network to think of. As a president, a leader of men.
I'm excited to find out to whom he sent this manifesto.
Well, I got one for you. He didn't send it to anybody per se.
Uh-huh.
He writes it, and then he tries to distribute it. He basically tries to get it to his people and go, get this out to everybody. Kind of like the videotape. He's not
okay.
like the Unabomber. He's going to send it to the Washington Post.
Right.
He just writes this manifesto, and he accuses the local Republican political machine of covering up for the Brookhaven UFO conspiracy
mm-hmm.
and using forest fires to cover their tracks in coordination with the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
He also accuses them, Brookhaven and the U.S. military and the local political leadership, of trying to eliminate him. He then lays out in the rest of the manifesto all the reasons why they'd want to kill him. And he mentions, for instance, that he is a secret spy for the CIA.
Oh, well.
And has been since he was 19 years old.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, right?
I'm sure of it.
Yes. Well, he had one problem with this. He couldn't prove it because he had never been paid by the CIA. He had no receipts that he'd ever been given a paycheck.
It doesn't work that way. They just pay you through your brain.
Yeah, he was doing pro bono spy work. He was just like, look.
He was a volunteer CIA agent.
I get paid by X-Files episodes. That's my pay.
Oh, my goodness.
So Ford has been this key target of the KGB also. I forgot to mention that.
Hello.
He was, which if you don't know, the KGB was the intelligence agency, the equivalent of the CIA for the Soviet Union. And apparently they tried to kill him 5 times. 5 times he survived.
Every time. Yeah, this guy.
Not only that, he saved President Reagan's life.
Why am I not surprised?
Of course. Now, how did he do this? He stopped a KGB agent from joining the Reagan for President committee before he was president.
Oh, my God.
Local politics. He's all about local politics.
And it's just some guy with like a Polish last name and he thinks it's a Russian last name. Who wants to like get on there and he bullies him out of the out of like the Elks Lodge hall when they're having their meeting.
Like all loud. Like, go back to Ruska. So also, of course, because it's the 90s, he also had thoughts about AIDS and where AIDS came from.
Oh, I bet he did.
So he was like, you know, that AIDS stuff and Ebola, they were both manufactured by, what's your guess?
Russia?
Aliens.
Oh, aliens.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I forgot about
that. The aliens were using AIDS and Ebola to depopulate sub-Saharan Africa.
Sure.
Very X-Files.
All makes so much sense. Yes,
exactly. He also claimed that there was lots of evidence that the U.S. government had of these aliens, including the fact that President Nixon and Jackie Gleason had both seen the aliens. You remember that story?
I told you that story. See? You did tell that story.
See, I'm not the only cuckoo like that story. So, if you want to hear that ridiculous history, we did a double episode, I tell that story.
Yeah, anyway, he does. Brilliantly.
Back to his manifesto, Ford claimed to his hustler and friend and roommate, Joe Massicelli. He claims that that dude, in his manifesto, mind you, he says, Joe was also a spy. He was, can you guess where from?
Joe's a spy?
Mm-hmm. Joe Massicelli. Where's Joe Massicelli a spy from?
Is he an Italian spy?
Nope, Israeli intelligence. He's from the Mossad, of course.
Of course.
He just looks Italian. So Joseph Massicelli was apparently a cover name. So,
oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Things start to unravel, and Szabo's like, oh, man. He just washes his hands of this when he sees the manifesto.
He washes his radioactive hands.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They're glowing. And
the
skin
just sloughs off.
He's like, I plead guilty. So he pleads guilty as fast as he can.
Good for him.
He also promises he'll testify against Ford. He's like, look, I will tell you whatever you want to know.
Yeah.
They put him on house arrest. They're like, okay, don't go to work. And he's like, nah, cool, that's fine. I'll just hang out here with my toys. And they're like, cool. Now, Joe Massicelli, the alleged Israeli spy, he pleads guilty. He also goes, I will testify against John Ford. The guy has barely known him.
Everybody's flipping on him.
He totally flips. Now, Ford is looking at 75 years for his radioactive assassination plot.
Wow.
But he decides he's got one last gambit.
He's going to flip on the aliens.
He's like, no, that would be amazing, though. He's like, you know,
I want to turn state's evidence against Szabor 7.
Exactly.
They're like, yeah, no.
He tries to turn state's evidence against himself. I will tell you the truth on John Ford. Now, while he's on, like, you know, waiting for trial, he gets locked up in a prison mental health hospital because they don't want to put him in regular jail.
That's the best
place. Clearly not, like, you know, hinged.
Yeah.
And
he's off campus at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Fully off campus. And he says that this is all according to his plan. Right?
Uh-huh.
He, and I quote, he says, the court says I'm not competent based upon these statements. Are they ravings of a madman or the writings of a perfect and master spy? He alleges that his manifesto is proof of his brilliance because it makes him look crazy. And the truth is in there also. He's like, look, I told the truth and it makes me look crazy. Who's not the master spy?
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
this
right?
guy.
So.
You know, he critiqued the bailiff in the court, too.
Totally. He's like watching him. He's like, ah. Look at how he slouches. So what do you think? Raving madman or perfect master spy?
Why not both?
Ooh, I like that. Look at you broad-minded.
One of his crew,
the KG veteran investigator, remember him? Preston Nichols?
Yes.
With the school bus and the mime detector?
Yeah.
He said of his old friend Ford, quote, he's as loony as they come, but he's a coherent loon. So the time traveler says he's crazy.
I'm not buying the coherent part, but yeah. Go
well,
ahead.
You know, apparently he says he's, you know, following A. Like, basically, A will get to C and B will be in between. And he's like, that's coherent. I'm like, okay, bro. Now, John Ford may be crazy. We don't know. He may not be. I'm just willing to keep that open as an option. Maybe he is a master spy tricking us all. Let's just pretend, right?
Could be.
Now, if he is playing crazy to avoid a life in prison, that is brilliant, right?
Yeah.
So, whatever. Now, no matter what, Ford still expects to get out of this hospital one day. He's still alive. He's still locked up in a mental health hospital. And he will, once he gets out, reveal the truth of the aliens living among us. Or as Ford put it in a letter to his loyal right-hand man, Steve Iavorone, quote, I'll bring home the bacon for everyone. Then we'll rebuild the Long Island UFO network and destroy the cover-up. And what did he write in closing of his manifesto?
Oh, God.
The truth is out there.
Yes.
So, Elizabeth, what is our ridiculous takeaway here?
The ridiculous takeaway is that I would like to go to an event put on by the Long Island
UFO network
outfit. Yeah. And I would really like to try out my boring thing after a presentation there.
I like it.
And then get poisoned and killed. I think my takeaway is, again, like I said, if you really believe this stuff, it has to be so frustrating and terrifying to think that you know something 100% and everyone's just like, no, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's something that you think, well, we're under attack by aliens.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Yeah, that would be a dire thing. If it were true, you would hope people would do what he's doing.
And I think, too, that it's also, you've got to be pretty ticked off if you're just a UFO person, like a person who's curious about UFOs or believes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are like all like the Air Force and, you know, military sightings and stuff, right?
I've got a friend who's a big time UFO.
So they're like legitimate things that you can be talking about. But then it's like they get tainted by these goofballs who are,
It's like Jesus in the sense that a lot of people mean well. And then you have other people who use it for weird stuff. Yeah. And you have a hard time deciding which is this person who's telling me this new story about Jesus or aliens. You're like, are they meaning well? Or are they just like completely
bats
in the belfry?
Powerful or mysterious thing is going to also elicit those who are having some troubles on their own. And then it seeps into it. So,
yep. And when you're having trouble parsing reality, aliens and Jesus can be real hard to make sense of.
Exactly.
So my ridiculous takeaway, thanks for asking, the fact that my friends apparently don't try hard enough.
Boring.
None of them have ever come to me with an assassination plot for our local political leaders.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, we could get some radioactive monkeys because in Davis, they got these radioactive beagles.
Beagles,
we'll dig them dogs up and we could do some damage. But no, none of them have come to me with this.
No.
You guys are letting me down.
They got to up their game.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's been a fun one.
It has been.
I'm Elizabeth Dutton.
I would like to be Zarin Burnett.
You can be for right now.
Thank you.
See, try it on. See how it fits.
Feels good.
You can find us online at Ridiculous Crime on both Twitter and Instagram. You got a tip for us about a ridiculous crime you'd like to hear about? You want to confess to a ridiculous crime?
Do it.
Oh, please hit us up. Email us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Chairman of the Unidentified Flying Oakland Objects Network, Dave Kustin. Research is by our extraterrestrial lead investigator, Marissa Brown. The theme song is by Thomas Phone Home Lee and Travis Alien Nation Dutton. Executive producers are Ben Beam Me Up Bolin and Noel, wait, I don't see it, Brown.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified? Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So Toyota is electrified, diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.